then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush your vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One word more for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a manly chest was throbbing for the blessed warning light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the man she's lonely crew, and the thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. It's December the 16th, 2010. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest.
There beside the singing river, that dark mass of men were seen, far above their shining weapons on their own beloved green. Death to every foe and traitor, forward strike the marching tune.
Okay, I'm going to begin this week's podcast by reading one of the most famous articles ever written by Edgar Steele, the man who is now waiting for his trial to begin on March the 7th on one of the most absurdly fabricated cases ever conjured up out of the FBI's fevered brain. Actually, let me break in here real quick before I proceed with that. I've just been given something on the internet which indicates that the second assassin hired to kill Cindy Steele has now been identified. And if this information is correct, then it explains a hell of a lot about what's been going on in this case. However, I'm not actually certain about this information and its provenance, so before I go running off at the mouth here, I want to make sure and get some kind of confirmation. I'll talk about this next week. Anyway, as I said, this is one of Edgar Steele's most famous columns ever, and it's entitled, It's the Jews, Stupid. It's dated October the 7th, 2002. And Mr. Steele opens with the famous aphorism from George Orwell's novel 1984, those who control the present control the past. Those who control the past control the future. And then he goes on to say, Jews are the problem. Jews have been the problem since before they saw to the crucifixion of Christ, in fact. Now they're bent upon World War III, just as they fomented so many of the last century's wars. Books, indeed libraries, have been written on this topic. I scarcely know where to begin. If you don't see Jews as being at least part of the problem, then you're seriously misinformed and wandering in extreme self-delusion. I won't even try to deal with you in this essay below this level. Go do your elementary research, then come back, because we don't even speak the same languages yet. Now, admittedly, I have a somewhat different take on these things, inasmuch as I've become such a target for them, daring as I have to stand up for free speech against government tyranny and actually represent real live racists in my legal practice. I and my children have received death threats from Jews. My professional reputation has been destroyed by Jews. My law practice has been destroyed by Jews. Not difficult, since virtually every PowerPoint in the profession is occupied by them. All because I thought it was unfair to hammer the defenseless for being a little stupid. Of course, it turns out my clients weren't stupid at all. Little did I know. So, there's the source of my bias for all to see. However, just because you're paranoid, as they say, doesn't mean they're not out to get you. And they're out to get us all, believe me. The more activist among us come in for special treatment. It's not for nothing that I use the tagline from The Matrix to close my essays. The Matrix is a must-see movie for its allegorical take on society today. Most people are just batteries. See the movie, I'm not going to explain it here. While some are actively fighting the agents. Without a Neo, we are hopelessly outgunned, but once the red pill is taken, there's no return. Most Jews play their roles right along with the rest of us in furtherance of the schemes of the New World Order architects. They have so many names, but Olympians is the self-chosen one they seem to like best. But most Jews are just batteries, too, little apparatchik batteries. They are as deluded as the rest of us, busily scurrying to deliver us all to their masters. They made me their enemy even before I knew that they were my enemy, just as they've done for eons in country after country. Is every Jew part of the problem? No. But there is such a concentration of them in the nub that it can be called nothing but a Jewish problem. The current major manifestation is the impending invasion of Iraq, soon to be followed by America's war on the rest of Israel's enemies. Now, this isn't particularly relevant, but there is a reason that America has become the second most hated country in the world, after Israel, of course. We've bound ourselves to Israel and given over our media and our government to Zionists. Again, do your research and find out that all the media is now Jewish-controlled, as are most of the government power positions, virtually all of the banking and education, and a good percentage of corporations. History has been rewritten. The truth about so many things is starting to emerge. Pearl Harbor, the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, etc., etc. My favorite is the Holocaust shakedown, which now is becoming too threadbare to be sustained. A friend of mine puts it best. In all of German-occupied Europe, there resided 2.4 million Jews before the war, according to the World Jewish Encyclopedia. After the war, 3.8 million Jewish Holocaust survivors were receiving pensions from the German government. Tragically, the remaining 6 million were lost. The mass graves at Treblinka have been proven not to exist. There were no gas chambers and ovens at Dachau or Auschwitz. Even the Jews have now been forced to acknowledge these facts. Do your research and find this out for yourself. The Diary of Anne Frank was partially written with a ballpoint pen. Ballpoint pens were not commercially available until after World War II. These have been lies, people. In Canada, Germany, Austria, England, Holland, and many other Western European countries, I would go to jail for saying what I did in the four previous paragraphs. Ask those now languishing in those countries' prisons for saying the same things. Guess who's trying to get these laws passed in America to jail us here, too, merely for saying the same thing. During Clinton's first presidential campaign, his campaign director, James Carville, devised a simple thing to keep Clinton focused on what Carville correctly perceived to be the very thing about which the American electorate was most concerned. He wrote, "It's the economy, stupid," on a piece of poster paper and taped it to the wall over Clinton's desk. I propose to employ the same sort of thing in order to keep us focused on what I perceive to be the real problem in the world today. It's the Jews, stupid. The present is being rewritten as we speak. Thus, it becomes possible for them to write the future, just as foretold by Orwell. Sad to say, the future does not bode well for the likes of thee and me. I've been dragged kicking and screaming to the conclusion that we come to life with considerable baggage, hardwired into our soul, DNA, genes, whatever. I conclude that the Jews cannot help it. Their need to get on top of us while all the while whining about what victims they are is part of their basic structure. Most Jews, with any honesty, will attribute it to their culture. True, as far as that goes, but it doesn't go nearly far enough. Many on my list will never see this message. I find that my internet access is being cut off incrementally. Many ISPs are blocking my domain name, saying there is either something technically wrong with my domain hoster's DNS addressing, there's nothing wrong with it, or in retaliation for spamming and virus propagation. Now, the recent boogaboo virus has been sent to lots of people this past week, with my domain name embedded as the source. I've been getting tons of returns from people of whom I've never heard, and who have never heard of me. The virus gets directed to some poor sap's computer, you see, and then it dutifully spreads itself to everybody the poor sap knows, with the return address being poorsap@conspiracypenpal.com. Bounces and complaints come into my domain's catch-all mailbox. My equipment is clean, of course. ISPs, thinking I'm the source, put my domain on blacklists so that henceforth none of their customers ever see anything from me. Now, if it were just me, I would chalk it up to paranoia, but it isn't. There are a number of the politically incorrect being targeted by the chosen who have been getting precisely the same treatment, so much so that I suspect the bugbear virus is simply a cover for shutting us down. It's the Jews, stupid. Now, this is far worse than the hack attacks so many of us have suffered in July and August, routed through Palnet.com on the West Bank by the Israelis. That was coincident with the huge upsurge in the Wormklez virus, you may recall. Now, please pass this on to others. If you know you're on my list and you're not getting this firsthand, please raise a stink with your ISP about it. Without you even knowing it, lots of people like myself are being cut off from you. This is how censorship on the internet is taking place these days. That's why I feel the need to get this particular message out of my craw before I lose my forum altogether. Lots of this stuff gets traced back to Israel directly or close by, such as to Palinet.com. I've done it time and again, as well as to one Jew or another in New York. Are those who have not researched this are totally unaware of the massive bulletin board campaign being waged out of Israel, orchestrated by Jews everywhere against those of us here in America who are trying to awaken our countrymen. Yes, there is a conspiracy. Yes, it is being run by Jews. Yes, it is being condoned by our government, which has become Jewish. It isn't benign, either. Witness noted Harvard Law professor and Jew Alan Dershowitz's serious suggestion about legalizing torture in America for dissidents. His preferred method? Antiseptic needles inserted beneath one's fingernails. By the way, just how does Harvard end up having half its student body being Jewish? Particularly when most of us can't afford to send our kids to state colleges. And who exactly do you suppose is behind the recent eradication of the Bill of Rights in America? And with most of the legal profession's power positions now in Jewish hands, there's nobody to set things right. It's the Jews, stupid. California's state government is sinking into a morass of red ink, clearly leading the nation into the Depression. So why do even the most ridiculous Jewish interests still get all the state funding they want, led by the Simon Wiesenthal Center in L.A., as evident from the most recently approved state budget? Just as they were in Russia, Jews have become the American ruling class. Just as they did in Russia, they are bleeding America dry. What, didn't you know communism was a Jewish invention? Just what do you think Lenin, Marx, and Trotsky were? Just who do you think funded the Russian Revolution? What do you think a kibbutz is? Just who do you think was responsible for killing over 20 million Russian Christians in the early 1900s? The Russian Mafia? No, the Jewish Mafia. And the mob in America is and has been for the past 100 years Jewish. Who do you think is behind the move to eradicate Christianity from America, starting with every public venue? Check out the names of the plaintiffs and attorneys and judges involved with those Pledge of Allegiance, Ten Commandments, Christmas lights, cross cases. They rhyme. It's the Jews, stupid. Judeo-Christian, what a sick joke. This was a Christian country when founded. It has become a Zionist country. Judaism is anathema to Christianity. Read the Talmud before you reject this line of thinking. I have. You will be shocked, I promise you. Read the New Testament. Christ said it straight out. Things have not changed in 2,000 years. Who do you think has been behind the racial polarization in America during the last 40 years? Do your research. Find out the names of the civil rights leaders and lawyers. You'll be surprised, I guarantee you, to find that they rhyme. What, you didn't know that all the Jews in political power in the U.S. today are also Israeli citizens? Ask Ari Fleischer, Bush's spokesman, or Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Perle, Scooter Libby, Edelman, Satloff, Kissinger, Luttwak, Feith, Zakheim, Abrams, Grossman, Haas, Zulik, Schlesinger, Simbler, Chertoff, Bolton, Greenspan, Goldsmith, Golden, Gersten, Gildenhorn, Weinberger, Bodman, Cohen, Davis, Bloomfield, Lefkowitz, Frum, Melman, Blakeman, all Jewish, and all running things in Washington, names from today's newspapers. Even Colin Powell has a Jewish forebear. He grew up in a Jewish neighborhood and speaks Yiddish. Didn't know that, did you? His family was Shabbat's goy for the Jews, did their forbidden work on the Sabbath. It's the Jews, stupid. The price for the White House? Selling out to Jewish interests. That's why the so-called War on Terror. That's how Bush came from nowhere and coasted to the presidency. He, Clinton before him, and most of the presidents of modern times are traitors, pure and simple. They sold their country, including you and me, for a turn at the trough. Yes, you heard me right. George Bush is a traitor. Why in the world does America have to share Israel's fate? Simply because the Jews want to eject the Palestinians from all of Palestine today. Why do American boys have to die to advance Israel's interests, when Israel's boys do everything they can to shirk the call of duty during war? Did you know that the malingering coward slapped by Patton was Jewish? Why does America lionize people like Clinton and Bush, both of whom dodged the draft? Shabbat's goy, that's all they are. It's the Jews, stupid. They're going to get a large number of Americans killed, and soon. Oh, weren't those prophetic words? They're going to impoverish almost all of us. The party is over. Something is coming at us and coming fast. The market is in freefall again. It's 1 month until general elections here in America. Several major banks are literally on the edge of failing. Deflation is actively taking hold, along with its cousin, depression. Bush has been slamming through his domestic crackdown agenda, designed to cope with all of us when the wheels come off next year. Monday night brings some sort of major presidential address about Iraq. Look for Bush to announce that he doesn't need UN approval to wage war on Iraq. Of course, we've been bombing that country to shreds for weeks already. Everybody in Europe knows this, but it has been suppressed in America. War is the classic distraction from an economic meltdown. No, 9/11 wasn't perpetrated by a bunch of ragheads at the controls of 757s. Again, do your research and think for yourself. The 8 a.m. work population for the World Trade Center was about 40,000. Countless Jewish companies moved out just in advance of 9/11 or had their entire staffs elsewhere that day. Jews, laughing gleefully, were witnessed photographing the entire disaster. The number of Israeli Jews who died along with all those innocent victims, foreign nationals, and police firefighter heroes? Exactly one. Before 9/11, Israel was being badly skewered in America's Jewish-controlled media. That has all changed now, of course. Follow the money. It's the Jews, stupid. Wake yourself up fully, then awaken the others. That's all we can do. For now. Well, actually, Ed, now there's something more that we can do, and I hope you're alive to see it. Okay, first music break. Down through the past century, I think the French have gotten something of a bad break, military reputation-wise. Basically, the French are as good as their officers and their leadership. Give them a Napoleon, and they'll conquer all of Europe. Give them a de Gaulle, and they hand over Algeria to the Muslims. Give them a Sarkozy, and they hand over their whole country to the Muslims. Well, they didn't do very well in either world war, and the one time they went up against the Germans one-on-one without allies, the Germans kicked their ass. That was in 1870 at a place called the Battle of Sedan, and basically the French army threw down their weapons and ran. But to give them their due, there was one regiment in the entire French army who, during that disgraceful defeat, stood and fought to the death, and who were virtually wiped out. This incident became kind of the French version of the Alamo, and of course they had a military march written for them. This is the Regiment of the Sambre et Meuse.
Yeah.
You know, I just played back the first segment, and listening to Ed Steele's classic piece on It's the Jews, Stupid, reminds me that it's been a while since I got back to basics on this program and really ripped the kikes a new one. So let me ramble on about the Jews for a while. The Aryan race has been the creative force in all civilization. Now, this is a view that was shared by, among others, President Theodore Roosevelt and Cecil Rhodes. The Jew is the eternal enemy of Aryan values and Aryan culture. He's a destroyer and always has been one. Now, the USA in the year 2010 is under the same degree of Jewish domination that Weimar Germany was under in 1929. Now, Sir Arthur Bryant, who was a respected historian in the 1920s, wrote that although Jews comprised only 1% of the German population, in 1924, in the Reichstag, they constituted a quarter of the Social Democrats. The Jews controlled 57% of the metal trade, 22% of grain, and 39% of textiles. More than 50% of the Berlin Chamber of Commerce were Jews, as were 1,200 of the 1,474 members of the Stock Exchange. Now, of the 29 legitimate theaters in Berlin, 23 had Jewish directors. Authorship was almost a Jewish monopoly. In 1931, of 144 film scripts worked, 119 were written by Jews and 77 produced by them. Now look at Hollywood in 2010. Jews totally dominate the film industry. Although most of the films are vulgar, violent trash, the Jews fall all over themselves in giving each other awards for producing such crap. Jewish propaganda films flow out of Hollywood, you know, Schindler's List and all that horse manure, and across the TV screens. Look around. The USA of today mirrors the Germany of 1929. Since Jews stick together as a race, they pull and shove each other up the ranks of corporations and pull strings, ensuring that members of their race are given the first shot at student openings in major universities and every other place you can imagine. Bryant wrote that in law and in medicine, a lucrative, prestigious field, Jews were vastly overrepresented. In Berlin in 1931, 42% of the city's doctors and 48% of its lawyers were Jews. Now, the Jews in Weimar Germany used their propaganda levers to ridicule German ideals. They even slandered the memory of the fallen German soldiers of that terrible war, World War I. During the horror days of the Great Inflation, Jews were, by and large, wealthy people. They took expensive vacations while ordinary Germans starved. Now, today, Jews control 70% of the wealth in the USA. Today, in 2010, the USA is totally dominated by Jews. Virtually every newspaper or magazine is owned by Jews. Their self-serving propaganda constantly fills the TV screen. The federal government is totally under Jewish control. U.S. military forces are the pawn of Israel. The banks and the markets are theirs. They systematically denigrate our founding fathers and our heritage. Adolf Hitler arose and removed that yoke. Will we? In this final decade of the 20th century, there is an establishment agenda which clearly calls for the forced physical, social, cultural, and biological admixture of white Americans with the Negroid, Mongoloid, and Mongrel races. The ruling elite intend to achieve racial harmony by deliberately altering the racial and ethnic demographics of America, and by eliminating the Caucasian race through interracial marriage, or at least interracial sex, to produce a new, hybridized, raceless, classless, brown America. Everywhere we turn, in product advertisements and TV dramas, situation comedies and Hollywood movies, and indeed all throughout the mass entertainment industry and the news media, non-whites are placed at center stage in our society. Black athletes and gangster rappers are held up as role models for young white niggers, wiggers we call them. All the while, white males are portrayed as fools like Al Bundy and nauseating cartoon caricatures like Beavis and Butthead or Homer Simpson. And in the world of political correctness, one media image always predominates over all others. The racially mixed couple. The revolting list is endless, and I won't get into details. Everybody listening to this knows what kind of world we live in and what the television bombards us with every day. Now, what does the MTV generation actually see on MTV? More often than not, they see non-white males dancing with white girls and light-skinned negresses writhing and cavorting alongside depraved white girls in a sort of implied sexual smorgasbord. From primetime television shows to rock music shows, Levi Strauss jeans advertisements. Race mixing is hip and cool and obviously the thing that the power structure wants white youths to do. How the hell do you think so many dumbass young white people were buffaloed into voting for Barack Hussein Obama? Now, the rot began to noticeably set in back in 1933 with the election of Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the elevation of his wife, Eleanor, who was an unspeakable lesbian hag, to the position of First Lady. Since that time, American society and government have grown into one gigantic cesspool of moral putrefaction. White working Americans are paying for it all in cash and in the wasted lives and empty futures of our children, and also in the mongrel babies that our airheaded Kelly Bundy-type daughters are producing because they've been so cruelly and viciously deceived into betraying their race and their heritage. Now, who are the authors of the left liberal agenda, and whose are the guiding hands that implement this plan? Who is behind this program to destroy all standards of decency and racial self-respect, to propel young white girls who are ashamed of being white into the beds of non-whites? Who exactly is it who wants to breed a new race of mongrels? The answer is simple. It is the Jews. We can no more honestly discuss race mixing and cultural poisoning without speaking of the Jews than one can discuss disease without mentioning germs. But today, the melting pot has become a festering trash heap. We allowed those infamous lines written by the Jewess Emma Lazarus about giving us the world's wretched refuse to be written on the Statue of Liberty, and that's what we've gotten in spades. Also in Mexicans, Puerto Ricans, Haitians, Mestizo Cubans, Hispanics of every stripe, Filipinos, Russian Jews, Chinese, Japanese, Koreans, Cambodians, Laotian Montagnards, Ethiopians, Somalis, Arabs of every Middle Eastern backwater, all are pouring over our borders unchecked and spilling off every airplane that lands and every ship that docks in this country. For all practical purposes, there is no immigration control of any kind in the United States. They're taking our jobs, our hospital beds, our welfare dollars, our medical and social services, our schools, and our daughters. They fill our prisons. They sell drugs to our children. They transmit AIDS and other infectious diseases. They depress wages by supplying an endless source of cheap labor. In many parts of this country, they're forcing their native languages on the rest of us, rather than learning to speak English just like white immigrants did in times past. Now, the Canadian Jewish intellectual Max Diamond, I'm not quite sure how you pronounce that, he called this acquisition of worldwide power by the Jews through the genetic admixture and destruction of every race except the Jewish race, quote-unquote, a true brotherhood of man. Where would the capital of such a world order be? Why, Jerusalem, of course. End quote. Wherever there is organized degeneracy and corruption, wherever the Christian religion is insulted and ridiculed and vilified, and wherever the white woman is cheapened into a sex object and her role as wife and mother is mocked and degraded, wherever our daughters and sisters are depicted in the arms of non-whites, wherever sex is commercialized and twisted into the loathsome perversions of homosexuality and sadomasochism and feminism and transvestism and pedophilia and all the other garbage, wherever the white male and the Western civilization he created are abused and reviled and subverted, there you will find the influence of the Jew. Always the Jew. Okay, I'm going to take a second music break right now. Now, those of you with any musical training know that the musical scale has 8 notes, each note having a sharp or a flat version. And when you space 2 human voices 5 notes apart on a scale, you get what's called a pentatonic fifth, which has a very weird and haunting kind of sound. A lot of folk and religious music uses pentatonic fifths, and it gives the music a very distinctive and memorable tune. This is Cordelia's Dad.
When first I came to town, they called me the Roving Jewel. Now they changed their tune, they call me Katie Cruel. Oh, diddle-a-la-day, oh, little old-a-la-day. Oh, that I was where I would be, then should I be where I am not here. I am where I must be, where I would be I cannot. Oh, diddle-a-la-day, oh, little old-a-la-day. Thank you. town that brought me the bottles plenty. Now they change their tune, they bring me the bottles empty. Oh, riddle all day.
Okay, let's get back to my rap on the Jews. Who created communism? One of the crucial foundation blocks of today's New World Order. The Jew Karl Marx, as well as his colleagues Friedrich Engels, Karl Liebknecht, Victor Berger, Max Eastman, Daniel De Leon, Lev Bronstein, also known as Leon Trotsky, with his army of Jewish commissars, and the list just goes on and on. Marxism has been an offshoot of Judaism from day one. Who financed the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia? Jewish capitalist bankers such as Paul and Max Warburg, Jacob Schiff, and the Rothschild family. Who created feminism, the sexual perversion which teaches that women should liberate themselves by rejecting marriage, home, and children, and through lesbian sexual relationships? Jewesses like Gloria Steinem, Betty Friedan, Shulamith Firestone, Andrea Dworkin, Naomi Wolf, and Bella Abzug. What organizations actively promote the murder of millions of unborn white infants through abortion? The American Jewish Congress, the B'nai B'rith Women, the National Council of Jewish Women, the United Synagogues of America, the Women's League of Conservative Judaism, the Union of American Hebrew Congregations, the National Federation of Temple Sisters, the American Jewish Committee, and the North American Federation of Temple Youth have all come out in favor of the pro-choice agenda. As if murder is a choice. Judaism is the one major American religious denomination which gives unqualified support to abortion, except for Orthodox Jewish rabbis, who are adamantly opposed to abortion for Jews. Who created the vile counterculture of the 1960s that now dominates our universities and our government and our airwaves? New Left Jews like Abby Hoffman, Jerry Rubin, Mark Rudd, Bernadine Dorn, Herbert and Bettina Apthecker, Allen Ginsberg, and Susan Sontag, who once described the white race as the cancer of history. In the U.S. Congress, who are the chief instigators of government violation of the Second Amendment right of all Americans to keep and to bear arms? Jewesses Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer, Senator Charles Schumer, Congressman Barney Frank, former Senator Howard Metzenbaum, and present Senator Arlen Specter, although I think he got thrown out the last election. It's all to the good, but still, you get the idea. Gun control is a very Jewish phenomenon. Now, these people took a solemn oath to uphold the United States Constitution when they assumed office, and yet they violate that oath without cavil every time they introduce, lobby, or vote for gun control legislation. Why the apparent casual willingness to violate their oaths of office? because they know nobody's gonna do a damn thing about it. Now, what is the basis for the Jews' universal and long-standing historical reputation for dishonesty and untrustworthiness? Well, I'll tell you something you may not know. Every year, during the most solemn holy day on the Jewish calendar, the Kol Nidre oath is sung in Jewish synagogues. That means the All Vows. In fact, it is the liturgical high point of the annual Yom Kippur, or Day of Atonement festival. And with the following Kol Nidre oath, Jews ready themselves for another year among the Gentiles, and I quote, "All vows, obligations, oaths, or anathemas, pledges of names, which we have vowed, sworn, devoted, or bound ourselves to, from this Day of Atonement until the next Day of Atonement, whose arrival we hope for in happiness, we repent aforehand of them all. They shall be deemed absolved, forgiven, annulled, void, and made no effect. They shall not be binding, nor have any power. The vows shall not be reckoned vows. The obligations shall not be obligatory, nor the oaths considered as oaths." Okay, basically what this means is that every year the Jews go to their synagogue and they get forgiveness in advance from God, as they think, for every lie that they're going to tell to Gentiles for the next 12 months. Whose influence thrust Great Britain into war with China to make the Far East safe for the opium trade, the original drug trade, which produced all the crap we've got today? The Jewish Sassoon family of bankers and drug dealers. Who were the traders in human flesh who brought the blacks to America? In the Carnegie Institute publication entitled Documents Illustrative of the Slave Trade in America, we find the following partial listing of Jewish owners of slave ships. Abraham Pereira Mendez, Aaron Lopez, Moses and Samuel Levy, Jacob Franks, Isaac Levy, Nathan Simpson, Justice Bosch, John Abrams, Henry Kruger, Jacob Phoenix, Mordecai and David Gomez, Nathan Marston, Abraham Lyle, blah, blah, blah. It just goes on and on and on. Indeed, the slave trade was almost entirely a Jewish enterprise as far as the actual financing went. The black captives were sold into slavery by their own chiefs or by rival tribes on the west coast of Africa. Yankee skippers and crews captained the slave ships on the dangerous Middle Passage and battled tropical storms, deadly diseases, hostile tribesmen on the coast, and the ever-present danger of slave revolts on board, while the Jews sat safe in Boston and Providence and Nassau and Charleston and reaped the profits. Yet despite the role of the Jews in bringing the blacks to this country in chains, who financed and directed the so-called Civil Rights Revolution when it served their purposes later on? Jews like Jack Greenberg of the NAACP Legal Department, Marvin Rich of CORE, Herbert Aptheker of the Communist Party USA, Jewish symphonic conductor Leonard Bernstein, who held fundraising cocktail parties for the Black Panthers, and Rabbi Israel Mill of the Rabbinical Council of America's Civil Rights Task Force. Of the three so-called civil rights activists killed by Southern partisans in the famous Mississippi burning incident in 1964, one was a black and two were Jews. Who writes the scripts of television shows that ridicule traditional moral values? Wait until the end of any Hollywood movie or television sitcom and watch the credits roll. Notice all the Goldbergs, the Levines, this Stein, that Stein, Silvermans, Kagans, and all the other obviously Jewish names. Now, we must stop this malicious destruction of our culture and our nation. We have to refuse to allow ourselves to be deceived, indoctrinated, and intimidated by an alien people. And make no mistake about it, the Jews are an alien people in our midst. The Jewish U.S. Supreme Court Justice Louis D. Brandeis made this point very clearly when he stated, and I quote, "Let us recognize that we Jews are a distinct nation, of which every Jew, whatever his country, his station, or shade of belief, is necessarily a member. Not only are they in our midst, they're the occupants of all the seats of power in this nation. Jews own the news media and the entertainment industry. They control the Federal Reserve Bank and thereby enjoy a stranglehold on the economic health of our people. And by means of high finance, they've gained control of corporate America. Using bribery, blackmail, and deceit, they've seized control of the U.S. government, along with all the power of coercive force which goes along with it. The result has been the open butchery of white separatists like the Weaver family and non-approved religious dissidents such as the Branch Davidians in Waco, Texas, and those Texas Mormons. Things like the frame-up of Edgar Steele. We in white America are living under alien occupation, If we are to survive as a race, and if civilization is to be maintained on the North American continent, we must, like our forefathers, resist this tyranny with every means at our disposal. The Northwest Migration is now in the formative stages of building such a resistance. Now, you have the moral duty to join and support the Northwest Front. You have the moral duty to help us in our efforts without cavil and without stint. Will you take upon yourself this duty, this burden of history? Do you have the right stuff? Okay, I've rambled enough now. Let's go for the third music break. This is kind of a humorous song I dug up about a Scottish slacker who gets stopped on a street in Edinburgh by a cop who mistakes him for an Irishman, and things deteriorate from there. Now, you guys out there might have some difficulty in understanding the Scots Lowlands dialect of this song, but here's a hint. When he sings about Old Reekie, he's talking about the city of Edinburgh. That's what the local people who live there still call it, I think, Old Reekie. Now, this goes back to the 18th century or so, when the sanitation system in Edinburgh wasn't quite what it might have been, and the city apparently had a very noticeable odor. Anyway, this is Dick Gaughan.
My name is Duncan Campbell from the Shire O'Gill. I've travelled this country for monies and miles. I've travelled through Ireland, Scotland and all, and the name I go under's bold and proud. One night in Old Reekie, as I walked in the street, a saucy big pole was a chance for to meet. He glowered in my face and he gave me some jaw, saying, "When come ye over, Boulder and Cobra?" Well, I am not a pat, though in Ireland I've been, nor am I a paddy, though Ireland I've seen. But were I a paddy, that's nothing at all, for there's many's a bold hero from there and Cobra. Pass by the castle over here, but you are turned to Scotsman as soon as you're here. You left your own country for breaking the law, and we're seizing all stragglers from Erin O'Brien. Oh, and were I a pat, and you knew it were true, or were I the devil, then what's that to you? Were it not for the stick that you hold in your paw, then I'd show you a game played in Erin Cobra. Then a lump of black thought that I held in my chest, about his big body I made it to twist, and the blood from his napper I quickly did draw, and paid him stalking and trust for Erin Cobra. Catch that daft rascal, he's killed the police. And for every friend I had, I swear he had swore. It was terrible hard times for them. But I come to a wee boat that sails and falls, and I packed up my gear and I steered for the north. There we'll take Old Reekie, your pole lessons all, and the double gangway says Erin Cobra. So come on, ye young people, for the where you're from, don't give a damn to what place you belong. I come from Argyll and England, Sabra, but I ne'er took a drill being called Erin Cobra. Thank you.
One more digression here on the Jews. Some time ago, I got an email that I've hung on to, and I'll read that to you now. Hello all, my name is Rich, and I just recently joined this list. I'm interested in revisionism and open debate on the Holocaust. Does this list engage in open debate on the Holocaust, or did I join the wrong list? Also, I just read about Jewish ritual murder. Do you people believe that this is true? Yes, Rich. As a matter of fact, I do believe that the Jews have practiced ritual murder as part of their religious ceremonies in the past, and that they almost certainly do so today with the following qualifiers. First off, I don't believe that this practice is or ever has been widespread, but it's always been restricted to a small number of the most hardcore rabbis and Jewish Kabbalistic mystic sects. I am perfectly willing to accept the likelihood that individual Jews down through history have been falsely accused of this practice, just as I believe that, on the other hand, it's often been carried out undetected and or unpunished. The Bylas case in 1913 in Russia is a good case in point. Mendel Bylas himself was probably innocent of the actual commission of murder, although he may have been peripherally involved in covering up the act on the part of other Jews. For those of you who are unfamiliar with this case, it's pretty typical. A young Russian child was found murdered, and the Jews were accused of killing the kid in a ritual sacrifice. And after all kinds of hoopla and yelling and screaming and hollering from the liberals and condemnation by the world, blah, 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 they put this one guy on trial named Mendel Bylas, and they acquitted him. But somehow or other, in all the hoopla and the sound of the fury and the whooping and hollering about how the poor little Jews are being persecuted, no one ever did quite manage to determine just who did kill the little boy. That generally seems to be the case. A dead child turns up bearing the marks of ritual sacrifice, and the Jews are accused, and they yell and scream and whoop and holler and turn flips yelling about how they are being persecuted and it's all a plot against them and blah, 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 blah. And when the smoke clears away, the Jews are very seldom punished for this. But no one quite ever seems to get around to figuring out just who did kill the murdered child. Anyway, I'm willing to accept that the overwhelming majority of Jews are unaware that the blood libel has at least a partial grounding in fact, and a lot of Jews probably genuinely believe it to be a slander, just as most Jews probably believe that the Holocaust occurred more or less as advertised, despite mounting evidence to the contrary. Now, my belief in Jewish ritual murder is based on two foundations. First off, there's extensive study of the historical and cultural and religious aspects of Judaism. And secondly, there's my own personal observation, dealings, and experience with Jews as individual people over a period of years. I don't want to really go off on too much of a long speech about this, since ritual murder is not really one of my enthusiasms, but I've always figured that the Jews' public and political crimes are far worse than their private religious ones. But anyway, to sum up, there is an immense amount of anecdotal and circumstantial evidence that these sacrificial homicides took place in the past, back in times when concealment was harder and Aryans were far more aware and wary of the Jew than they are today. Now, it's significant that ever since the days of Babylon, which is a period of almost 4,000 years, this accusation, like many others, has been leveled against the Jews everywhere they have ever resided in the world. Time and again, down through the ages, the Jews have been caught literally red-handed, in some cases toting the dead body of the child whose blood they've drained away to dispose of it in sacks or wagons, sometimes with the corpse being found in synagogue cellars, so forth and so on. Now, the Jews' response to this is always, "We is being persecuted!" They maintain that down through 40 centuries of history, there has been this mammoth conspiracy to frame them for ritual murder of children. Now, according to this theory, in places as far apart as Cochin China, medieval Germany, 1913 Kiev, 1970 Montreal, and among peoples as diverse as knightly crusaders, Turkish sultans, 12th century Yorkshire Saxons, Argentinians, Cossacks, British historians, Renaissance Italian popes, assorted saints and sinners, the burgomasters of Prague, and modern-day Arabs, among all these people, living thousands of years apart and in different worlds, different countries, different eras, among all these people, there's this big, long, continuous plot, periodically, to murder small children, drain them of blood, and plant the bodies on Jewish premises or in Jewish vehicles, etc., and blame the poor little persecuted Jews. Now, that's one hell of a conspiracy. Now, there are other similar complaints that are always leveled against the Jews wherever and whenever they've gone. Economic trickery and despoliation, refusal to assimilate, disloyalty to their host country, arrogant behavior and hatred against their hosts, etc., etc. The Jewish response is always the same. For 4,000 years, everybody in the world has been engaged in a colossal conspiracy to get them. And nowadays, most people believe that, which isn't surprising in view of the Jewish control of the media of communications that's existed in varying strengths in the Western world since the late 19th century. But in the old days, the Jews didn't control the media, and it didn't wash. Our medieval ancestors were not fools. They lived with the Jews side by side in close-packed urban communities, very small by modern standards, where everybody knew everybody else, and they knew the Jews far more intimately than we do today. Just like people today, they cared about their children. And when a child was slain, the entire community interested itself not only for purposes of revenge, but to ensure the safety of everyone's kids. Now, we are asked to believe that time and again, these little insular communities who discovered that they had a child killer in their midst stubbornly refused to apprehend the alleged Gentile real killers, quote-unquote, and instead they blamed the Jews out of religious bigotry. Now, what possible interest could any community, medieval or otherwise, have in lynching an innocent scapegoat and allowing a real killer of children to go free? Why would everyone in Trier or Lincoln or Spoleto or Kiev go along with such a miscarriage of justice when doing so put other children at risk? Another little question for you. Why, so far as we know, did the child killings cease once the Jews had been punished and usually driven from the community? There's another thing. The Jewish religion allows for and practices animal sacrifice per the Old Testament, or the Torah as they call it, although these customs have been long held in abeyance, and in theory they apply only to the temple in Jerusalem. There's a whole sect of Kohanim in Israel who practice and train successive generations of rabbis in the techniques of sacrifice in anticipation of the day when Israel succeeds in blowing up the Al-Aqsa Mosque or somehow wresting it away from the Muslims, and they rebuild the temple. And the Talmud teaches that non-Jews are goyim, beasts without souls. To a religious Jew, there's no difference between a German or an American or an African or a cow or a horse or a fish. All are lesser non-Jewish forms of life, humanoid or otherwise. And they were put here by God to serve and pleasure the Jew. Now, when the Jews claim that they don't practice human sacrifice, they are, by their own weird lights, telling the truth because they don't consider Gentiles to be human. Finally, for the past 38 years, I've been in a unique position to observe Jewish behavior and the Jewish character at first hand. Since being a National Socialist, they don't bother to keep their usual variety of masks on with me, and they let all that Talmudic hatred hang out. Now, anyone who's ever done night duty in a National Socialist headquarters and lifted the telephone for call after call, hour after hour, to hear the crazed, screaming Brooklynese of a Jew driven mad by hatred, spewing a string of profanity and terms of excrement, raving like some demented parrot or monkey, totally out of all human control. Thus begins wisdom. Anyone who wants to understand the true nature of this light unto the nations need only oppose them in public. And he will very soon find out what utterly loathsome beings the Jews are, what vicious and contemptible cowards they are, and what potentially deadly serpents they are. To know the Jews is to despise them. But don't take my word for it. Check out the internet and see for yourself. See some revisionist post a calm and serious, well-researched comment on some aspect of the Holocaust, and then you'll see literally hundreds of hysterical, malicious, hateful, filthy, abusive posts that follow from this little cadre of about 24 kikes and kike wannabes from the ADL or Cass Sunstein's crew, whoever. They chase revisionists all over the internet and they go berserk, attacking, vilifying, insulting, and threatening anybody who dares to contradict the self-proclaimed chosen people of God. I won't belabor this further, but I'll close with two points. First off, the Jewish people are entirely capable of practicing ritual murder, and there is an immense amount of historical evidence that they did so. I can't imagine why they would stop now in this day and age, when they have the power to conceal their misdeeds and the captive media falsely to portray them as victims. How many of those little children that you see on milk cartons have fallen victim to the knives of the rabbis and lie buried in some remote wasteland or were ground up into dog food in some Jewish-owned processing plant? I'm convinced that at least some of them met that fate. Secondly, the Jews deserve everything that's happened to them in the past and everything that's coming to them in the future, especially when the Palestinians get their state as a toehold and America finally runs out of money and the New York Tel Aviv lifeline collapses. I don't question that innocent individuals of Jewish extraction have suffered down through the ages for crimes that they as individuals did not commit. But my people and all of the peoples of the world have suffered far more at the hands of the chosen ones. The Jews are great survivors, gotta give them that, like rats and cockroaches. And like rats and cockroaches, I doubt we'll ever be rid of them entirely. But the world is a much smaller place now. Global village and all that. It used to be that they could just move on to the next golden Medina when they wore out their welcome somewhere else. But they can't do that anymore. Everybody knows about them now, from Uganda to Honolulu, from Rome to Regina. They've run out of trap doors to dodge through and run out of places to hide. Their much-vaunted Israel is going to end up as nothing but a death trap. There is a reckoning coming. A reckoning between humanity and the Jewish people which will cause the very heavens to darken and the very devils in hell to hide their faces in shock and terror. You might say we owe them a Holocaust. We've been paying their bill for 70 years now, and at some point we're finally going to get what we've paid for. And when that day comes, who knows? Even I might pity them. Nah. Well, our time is up, and so that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington 98194, or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sasha Andaban. Freedom. Freedom.